I acknowledge that this meeting is being held on the traditional lands of the Esalen peoples and the Huchian, Muwikma, and Chechenya tribes of the Ohlone peoples, and give my respect to all the elders, both past and present. Thank you, Peter, Gao Gao, and Mr. Song, for the lovely introduction. I welcome all our Chinese visitors and the artists from Book Arts in China who have taken the long trans-Pacific journey here to be at the Codex. I think I can speak for everyone when I say that we greatly appreciate your attendance here and hope that it is the beginning of many long, fruitful relationships. I'd like to thank Peter Koch and the Codex board and staff for inviting me here today. And I'd like to thank Wan Jie, founder and president of the Artron Art Group, whose visionary publishing career in China suggested that he was predestined to be the primary patron of the Diamond Leaves project. I wish that more American executives would have the foresight to also substantially invest in public art education. I want to thank Zhu Bing, whose friendship and profoundly curious mind catalyzed the decade of conversations we had that led to the Diamond Leaves projects. I want to thank Artron again, and I want to graciously thank the Central Academy of Fine Art, the Central Academy of Fine Art Museum, John Ko, the director and owner of Bernard Korch Limited, and the staff and board of Booklyn, for not just making the first Diamond Leaves exhibition and catalog possible, but also for their generous, continuing support of the largest international triennial of artist books in the world and the most influential artist book event in the Eastern Hemisphere, which, I believe, is well on its way to becoming one of the major artist books exhibitions on the planet. For their seminal essays in the Diamond Leaves catalog, I would like to thank Mark Dimunation, chief of the Rare Book and Special Collections Division at the Library of Congress, David Senior, art librarian at the Museum of Modern Art, and Jiang Jun, designer, historian, and director of the Wenjin Engraving Museum. A big shout out to Meyer Taylor and Ari Misfeld from Booklyn and Gao Gao from CAFAM, who administered and managed the massive First Diamond Leaves exhibition and the equally gargantuan exhibition catalog. Without the work of these three people, Diamond Leaves would have simply not happened. And props to Felice Tebe, who kept Booklyn thriving as the rest of us were immersed in the Diamond Leaves project. I also need to thank all the artists, librarians and institutions who loaned the priceless canonical artist books that made the exhibition possible. Of special note are Jared Ash, who in 2012 was then with the Newark Public Library and is now a librarian at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and the aforementioned John Ko and Jiang Jun. I thank my wife, Chelsea Bailey, and her current education research partner, Jessica Fino, who in 2012 was working for Zhu Bing Studio in Brooklyn, for sharing their profound understanding of the cultural interface between China and the United States. Later in this lecture, you will be introduced to the revolutionary Anji play movement of acclaimed Chinese educator Cheng Zhuqin and the children's artist book projects that form an essential part of the Anji play curriculum. Cheng Zhuqin, Chelsea, and Jesse are now working together to bring the true play revolution to children across China and around the world. I could continue for hours, but suffice to know that these thank yous are both incomplete and focused on the first Diamond Leaves exhibition. I will just give you a very general thank you very much for all the other people not mentioned who made the first and second exhibitions and the symposium possible. Finally, I thank you, the audience. Many of you here have been my collaborators, my supporters, my collectors, my teachers, and my friends. And all of you, whether directly or indirectly, as creators, educators, and readers, have assisted in seeding a field that is now vibrant and fertile enough to grow Diamond Leaves. Thank you. I can't think of a more exuberant example of the amazing pan-historical and intergenerational syncretic culture of China today than that astounding performance by Tan Weiwei and the Zhang Family Band. Tan Weiwei is an internationally acclaimed pop star who, if you haven't heard her, you will undoubtedly hear her soon, singing in Matt Damon and director Zhang Yimou's new blockbuster Beijingwood film, The Great Wall. The Zhang Family Band, from Chunguang, a small village near Xi'an in Shaanxi province, has taken up the lifelong commitment to revitalizing Lao Qiang, or old country tune-style music, which has existed for at least 1,000 years. Seems amazing, but the backstories are even more fabulous. Tan Weiwei was actually failing her music conservatory classes until her Tibetan instructor, Lanka Dolma, taught her ancient Tibetan singing techniques. But I digress. The point here is that China is vibrant and China is different. China's ancient culture is based on Eastern concepts of Buddhism and Confucian social order and is essentially different from the individualism of Eurocentric Christian Western culture. So artist books made by Chinese artists in China are different from those in the West, and while it is tempting for Westerners to think that we are somehow bringing something new to China, it is much more crucial for Westerners to be ready to learn from the extremely sophisticated Chinese culture and to appreciate that the successes of our future collaborations are based in respect for different but equal cultural and aesthetic values. China is of itself an artist book. The world's first books, the world's first printing methods, and the world's first movable types were all invented in China. Western cultures have literally spent only hundreds of years trying to develop the typographical visual integrity of thousands of years of Chinese aesthetic practice. This sophistication shows in the work of Chinese artist bookmakers, whose work I have had the pleasure to encounter. I encourage you all to pay a welcoming visit to the tables of Book Arts in China and Booklyn for a sampling of exemplary books by Chinese artists. A few hours west of Shanghai, in Zhejiang province, on the famous tea-growing and bamboo-forested mountains of Anji County, where, incidentally, Zhang Yimou filmed Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, a revolution in early childhood education is taking place. Called Anji Play, this pedagogical revolution is surpassing the substantial achievements of Montessori, Reggio Emilia, and other Western early childhood educational movements. Unlike the United States, which is privatizing and dismantling its public education system, China is investing in public education at all levels and has an almost universal pre-kindergarten system. The Anji Play curriculum is used in every one of the 130 preschools in Anji County and serves over 14,000 children. Cheng Zhuqin, a lifelong early childhood educator from Anji, has developed a pedagogy that integrates her concepts of true play and environmental ecology and the use of 21st century technology into an amazing program for nurturing young children, teachers, and parents. This approach also mirrors current neurological research on early childhood learning and brain development. Part of the Anji Play program involves the usage of what I define as proto-artist books, which are constructed from what the Anji Play terminology labels as play stories and play planning. Teachers primarily function as observers and facilitators who document the children's play and support the children in planning and documenting their own play with writing, drawing, painting, and printmaking, child-invented alphabets, and transcription. Children can choose to plan their play with pre-play drawings, engage in self-determined play, and then make play stories from drawings and writings which analyze and expand upon their play activities. Books and assemblies are often produced from these play stories, and they're not necessarily static collections or bound in any specific fashion. There is a fluidity in the structure of these children's books that correlate with the dynamic variability of artist books. The day is filled with outdoor play sessions. To the untrained eye, it looks like recess has taken over the entire school day. At nap time, the teachers review the play stories and their own daily documentation of children playing and discuss how they can support the children with the mathematical, artistic, scientific, engineering, social, and other forms of learning that the children have experienced in their play. At the end of the day, the children share their play stories with each other and the teachers, discussing their own play and the play of others. Meta, 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 meta. As I stood in the middle of dozens of books composed of play stories that documented weeks of play, I realized that these children were making artist books that documented their actual growing, their actual play, their actual learning in the world. Images and text exuberantly crashed into one another. Children were encouraged to express themselves everywhere and to use the entire school as a sketchbook. No surface was exempt from the children's creativity. Anji play may very well prove to be the most important gift of the many gifts that Chinese culture has given to the world. American artists and educators are in the beginning of a great struggle, but I can reassure you that I have seen hope and joy in the mountains of Anji and in the south side of Madison, Wisconsin. These are just two of the places where Anji play is playing, and Anji play is spreading throughout the world. There are now programs being developed in New York, in various locations around California, including Richmond, right down the street in the same city that hosts the Codex Book Fair. What you can see here is that Chinese brains and neural pathways of reading and Western neural pathways of reading, the difference between infographic learning and alphabetic learning, actually activates different types, different parts of the brain. So there's an actual distinctive difference in the way that our brains form in line with actual language. So when we say that we are thinking differently from people, that is exactly and organically true. And I think these perspectives are what become very interesting. It is in part this distinctive Chinese perspective that makes Chinese artist Zhu Bing one of the most important artist bookmakers in the world. I don't say that lightly, and it's not hyperbole. As both an artist and a curator, I have empirical evidence that his growing body of continually exhibited innovative artist books, the Diamond Leaves Triennial, and other global projects that he has created have brought the largest audience to the medium of artist books and have had the deepest impact of any artist working in the field. His body of hundreds of books and the hundreds of essays and the curriculum regarding his artist books and other artwork is phenomenal. It's not a coincidence that he's Chinese. In fact, his linguistic and cultural background is crucial to his informed perspective on language as a global artistic phenomenon. His ability to operate at micro, macro, and meta levels in his books is a rare phenomenon. His abilities as a craftsperson and a scholar are exceptional. His humor and charm are infectious, and the profound and critical aesthetic experience his work evokes are exemplary, provocative, and beautiful. Born in Chongqing, China in 1955, Zhu Bing grew up in Beijing. During the Cultural Revolution, he lived in rural northwestern China. In the 1980s, after moving back to Beijing, he received both a BFA and an MFA at the Central Academy of Fine Arts. Since 1980, he has lived part-time in the United States, primarily in Brooklyn. He served as vice president of CAFA from 2008 to 2014 and is now a CAFA professor of graduate studies. His exhibition history is far too wide and long to even touch upon here. In 1999, he was a recipient of a MacArthur Fellowship Award known as the Genius Award. He's won the Fukuoka Asian Culture Prize and received the Southern Graphic Council's Lifetime Achievement Award in recognition of the fact that his, and I quote, use of text, language, and books has impacted the dialogue of the print and art world in significant ways. He's a doctor of humane letters at Columbia University, a Cornell University A.D. White professor at large, and was recently awarded the Department of State's Medal of Arts for his efforts to promote cultural understanding via his artworks. I think you get the point, so let me move on to what I feel are the three artist book projects that are good representations of the large body of artist book work that Zhu Bing has produced. Starting in 1987, Zhu Bing took over 4 years to complete A Book from the Sky. The book is comprised of printed volumes and scrolls containing 4,000 false Chinese characters invented by the artist and then painstakingly hand-cut into wooden printing blocks. Thus, the book is essentially unreadable, yet maintains the form of exquisite readability. Every human on the planet and ultimately every sentient reading creature in the universe would have the same experience trying to read this book. Perplexing engagement with incomprehensibility. It's a shadow of language. In 1994, Zhu Bing started the Square Word Calligraphy Project, which is an iconographic calligraphy system that renders English into a written form which has the appearance of Chinese characters. Along with the hundreds of handwritten calligraphy pieces, prints, books, installations, and conceptual pieces, he has created instructional workbooks that teach others how to use the system and has traveled an entire functional classroom installation in various manifestations for over a decade. The extension and resonance of this piece with the Book from the Sky is as obvious as the journey to 2003's continuing Book from the Ground project. Extending from heavenly and universal incomprehensibility to global comprehensibility, Zhu Bing's Book from the Ground project built a pictogrammatical writing system that was first sourced from the hundreds of air travel safety instruction pamphlets Zhu Bing collected from his constant globetrotting. This new language has manifested in artist books, pop-up books, a trade publication in graphic novel form, published by MIT Press and others in a global and simultaneous release, and in printed, digital, interactive, and virtual installations, as well as in augmented books on various platforms, such as the augmented book iPad interface premiered at the first Diamond Leaves exhibit. Writing on MIT's website, Zhu Bing blithely describes the project. 20 years ago, I made Book from the Sky, a book of illegible Chinese characters that no one could read. Now I have created Book from the Ground, a book that anyone can read. My journeys to China changed my life and opened my eyes, ears, nose, and mind. Two of my favorite artist books are specifically inspired by my time in Beijing, a city that dwarfs the little village of New York that I live in. As Above, So Below, the Central Beijing Codex, is my loving portrait of just a small part of Beijing, rubbed from the paths I wove back and forth through the Chaoyang neighborhood as I walked each day from my hotel room to the museum during the time I was working on the Diamond Leaves exhibition. I have done my historical due diligence, and I can rightfully claim that it is the first book with a structure that functions as both a matrix and a printing press. I rubbed impressions of Beijing manhole covers into the recto pages of the text block and then inked the rubbings with various inks and printed their impressions onto the facing verso pages. Using the book's pages as both the matrix and the print surface, I have contained the universe of printing in one entity. The book prints itself, or more precisely, one half of the book prints the other half of the book. In retrospect, I realized that this process was unconsciously inspired by an amazing tour of the Wenjin Engraving Museum given to me by a very exuberant Jiang Jun. There is nothing quite like a 2,000-year-long history of printmaking given in just 40 minutes with specific artifacts pointed out as examples of every historic reference to really get you going. Thus, the Central Beijing Codex refers to two ancient Chinese printing techniques, stone rubbings and woodblock printing. The use of the mundane subject matter is both an iconic reference to the preciousness of typical Chinese rubbing and printing subject matter and a homage to the immensity and complexity of Beijing. The book's documentation of the underground utility system of Beijing also provides an analog to the five Chinese elements. Electricity equals fire, gas equals air, traffic signals equal metal, water and sewage equals water, and the book itself equals wood. Another aspect of the project involves the realization that the initial wax monoprinting embeds micro samples of the Beijing environment into the side of the paper that contains the matrix. The book contains soil, dust, and other residues of Beijing within its very structure. This is not a book about Beijing. This book is a part of Beijing. I was standing in the middle of the Forbidden City with my camera, watching tens of thousands of people rush around taking pictures of everything. What use was my camera here? There were probably billions of photographs of this place. I could probably Google images for every last square inch, or Baidu it, as Google is blocked in China. To me, this was my first revelation. As a Westerner, I was surrounded by thousands of people, yet I had barely noticed them. Like any tourist, I had wandered in to see the stone, jade, and bronze of the palaces. But it was the people who were the most important aspect of this place. Their emotional connections to this historical location were intensely personal. What did I, as a non-Indigenous American from the United States, understand about a culture that was thousands of years old? As I had done in many of my artworks over the years, I turned my eyes and camera on the audience. I inconspicuously stood in front of the emperor's throne and took 100 pictures of the Chinese tourists who were taking pictures of the throne. The level of reverence and joy they were expressing was palpable. And thus we have Forward, a book about China made primarily for a Chinese audience, but I think its form and subject matter and message can be appreciated by all, despite the fact that those unfamiliar with the Forbidden City's architecture may miss part of the picture. One of my favorite aspects of this book is the fact that the forms of the cutout pages and the shadows they cast are reminiscent of Chinese landscape painting. The book functions both as a sort of mutated do-si-do codex and as a freestanding double accordion fold with, and yet again, another possible book history first, the world's first removable zipper binding. Dana Smith of Dana 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 Limited Editions in San Francisco did the fabulous photo collaging, binding, and printing on this amazing book. Here's the Diamond Leaves backstory. In 1968, my sister Candy moved to Madison, Wisconsin in order to drop out of the University of Wisconsin and join the student revolution. In 1980, I resigned my spot on the dean's list at Connecticut College due to political differences, which the college described as disciplinary action, and moved to San Francisco to join the punk movement and co-found Artist Television Access. In 1986, I met my future wife, Chelsea Bailey, in San Francisco. In 1990, Chelsea moved to Madison to attend the University of Wisconsin. Both the atmosphere of Madison and the fact that my sister lived there made Chelsea choose the UW. In 1991, I moved to Madison to be with Chelsea and started teaching at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where Kurt Allerslev, Christopher Wilde, and Mark Wagner became my students. Later in 1991, after selling some of my extremely esoteric and eccentric artist books to pioneering artist book curator Bill Bunce at the university's Kohler Art Library, which is located in the basement of the Elvehem Museum, Bill advised me to go upstairs to see the show, where I was enraptured by encountering the American premiere of Zhu Bing's Book from the Sky installation. In 1993, Chelsea and I were married, and in 1995, our daughter Isabel was born. In the mid-1990s, Kurt, Christopher, and Mark moved to New York City. In 1997, now Dr. Chelsea Bailey was appointed as a professor at New York University, and our family moved to Manhattan. In 1999, Kurt, Christopher, Mark, and I, with 9 other artist book raconteurs, founded the Brooklyn Artist Alliance. In 2000, Kurt, Christopher, Mark, and I started the Organic Collaborative Group and imprint. In 2004, Christopher saw Zhu Bing lecture at the Pratt Art Institute, and after the lecture, asked him if he would like to join the not-for-profit, artist-run Brooklyn Artist Alliance. Zhu Bing, who is not particularly fond of commercial art galleries, said yes, and thus Brooklyn became, and still is, outside of Zhu Bing's own studio, the only organization to distribute Zhu Bing's artist books in the Americas. In 2004, Organic invited Colombian-turned-New Yorker artist Eliana Perez to start the Tide Story series of books. In 2005, Zhu Bing joined the Tide Story project and started conversations with me about producing a major artist book exhibition that would explain the conceptual and contemporary artist book movement to audiences in China. These conversations catalyzed a prototype exhibition titled Found in Translation. Later in 2005, Zhu Bing's studio manager, Jessica Fino, who is fluent in Mandarin, joined the Tide Story project as a translator. At this time, Brooklyn was distributing Zhu Bing's books, prints, and multiples, and also producing Zhu Bing installations around the world. In 2006, the Found in Translation touring exhibition premiered Eliana Perez's, Zhu Bing's, and my versions of the Tide Story books and became the first exhibition to ever tour to all 3 Centers for Book Arts in New York, San Francisco, and Minneapolis. Over the next few years, both the Found in Translation exhibit and the Tide Story books would be exhibited around the United States and the world in Korea, Germany, and China, while discussions between Zhu Bing and I concerning the continually expanding artist book exhibition concept grew more and more focused. In 2008, Zhu Bing became vice president of the Central Academy of Fine Art in Beijing and started seeking support to produce what had grown into a comprehensive exhibit of the multiple ongoing historical trajectories of the contemporary artist book. Late in 2010, my father, a lifelong goldsmith known for his freehand organic diamond setting, died. And in honor of his life, I conceived of the Diamond Leaves title. In 2011, Zhu Bing secured funding and support for what was now known as the Diamond Leaves exhibition, and we began a series of intense exhibition design meetings whenever Zhu Bing visited his Brooklyn studio. In the beginning of 2012, Chelsea started doing bilingual early childhood projects in Tianjin, China, and in September of 2012, when the first Diamond Leaves exhibition opened at CAFAM, Chelsea was able to meet me there. In 2013, Chelsea started working with Cheng Zhuqin and Anji, and Zhu Bing started seeking support for another Diamond Leaves exhibit. In 2014, Jesse Cofino resigned from his full-time position at Zhu Bing Studio and joined the Anji Play executive team. Also in 2014, the Diamond Leaves Printing in Progress exhibit opened at the Houston Printing Museum. In 2015, the second Diamond Leaves exhibit opened and was followed by the first Diamond Leaves Symposium. Fortuitously, my wife was again on her way to Anji to work, so once again, we met in Beijing and then traveled to Anji together. Let me share with you just how frustrating it can be for an entitled, clueless American to work in China. I am unfortunately referring to myself. Note these images of the galleries. Now consider that this is 2 days out from the opening. Was the prissy American friend anxious? I mean, at 4 days out, the galleries were empty. And I was in full panic mode while the museum staff was perplexed about why I was so distraught. I was like, where's the lighting? Where's the vitrines? Where's the art? And they were so calm. They were like, oh, we'll install tomorrow. And I was like, wait, you mean you are going to start installing almost 300 pieces of furniture and 1,000 artworks 2 days before the opening? And they were like, yes. And I think they could have steamed pork buns above my head. And I was like, ah! And then 2 days out and total magic. Designer Li Yue's hundreds of glass and mirrored bottom custom-built vitrines appeared with hundreds of workers. People who sat in the corners wiring plugs into electrical cable and assembling lighting instruments, putting the entire wiring of the gallery together. You will see that almost all the gallery lighting was spotlit, and most of the vitrines had their own lighting. Custom shelves, tables, and vitrines which had been pre-painted and color-coded to the specific central and satellite exhibits were moved in and assembled. The museum conservators instructed teams of students and professional installers, and the team worked for 72 hours straight in revolving crews. I saw workers napping in the corners during the long stretches. The level of coordination was astounding. And even though I was zombie driving a forklift around the museum at 3 a.m. day of, searching for a vitrine because one of the custom vitrine's dimensions were off, I was very happy. I was happy because Zhu Bing had given me the opportunity to curate the artist book exhibition of my dreams, my canon. The central exhibit of the Diamond Leaves show was made of the many artist books I loved by the artists whose work I considered exemplary and important enough to share with the world's largest audience. Zhu Bing and I had profound concordance in the curating of the exhibition, and Zhang Ko and Zhang Jun were unimpeachable experts in their respective fields, and the work they chose was primarily from their impeccable personal collections. Of the thousands of books we considered, I can only think of two actual disagreements between Zhu Bing and myself. We had assembled an epic and monumental exhibition of artist books. With over 244 books and hundreds of pieces of art and bookcraft ephemera filling 20,000 square feet of exhibition space, the first Diamond Leaves exhibition was undoubtedly one of the largest and most comprehensive exhibitions of the global history of artist books to have ever been produced. Consult the almost 600-page bilingual Mandarin-English exhibition catalog for evidence and take care not to drop it on your foot. The goal of the exhibition was ambitious: provide a contemporary global arts history of artist books to promote a context to reinvigorate further growth and development of the ancient Chinese art of bookmaking and catalyze a dialogue across China and back into the world regarding both independent publishing and the artist book as a fine art medium in of itself. With attendance for the Diamond Leaves exhibit and events numbering in the hundreds of thousands, and with the first exhibit being so popular that it was extended twice, and with the popular academic and press reception so positive that the sponsoring organizations created the Diamond Leaves Triennial, it is apparent that the Diamond Leaves Project has had a major impact on the largest country in the world. And that impact keeps growing. When the first Diamond Leaves exhibit was in production, it seemed as if there were only a few dozen self-identified Chinese artist bookmakers who were focused on the book as the primary medium of their art practice. The call for submissions for the second Diamond Leaves exhibit garnered hundreds of responses, and it is important to note that the open call for Chinese artist books for the second exhibit was the first of its kind in China, and thus another pioneering program of the Diamond Leaves Triennial. As Xu Bing and I walked through the second Diamond Leaves exhibit doing the judging for the exhibition awards, Xu Bing pointed out that the books were influenced by books from the first Diamond Leaves exhibition. He joked that he'd never seen so many artist books on fabric in China before Candace Hicks' amazing embroidered books were shown at the first Diamond Leaves show. The first Diamond Leaves exhibition illuminated six of the dozens of branches of book types that spring from the tree of book history: early European codices, early Chinese printed books, Soviet constructivist books, livres d'artiste, artist books, and zines. Rather than being a comprehensive survey of artist books, the exhibit focused on unique, singular, and limited edition, under 100 copies, books created in the 21st century, while also providing examples of Chinese and Western historical presidents. These books are artist books by virtue of being primarily handmade or made on machines controlled by the artists. Though the subject matter is diverse, there is emphasis on, one, books that balance the usage of image, tactile experience, and material form; two, books whose materials and structures reflect their subject matter; and three, books that integrate text with image. Shout out to Gordon. Perfect. We, the curators, were not seeking to define what an artist book is. We were and remain far more interested in what an artist book can be, and how it can function as both fine art and an experimental laboratory for global visual language development. The accompanying satellite exhibits provided examples of important books throughout history. These small and exquisite selections of European and Chinese antiquity codices illustrate the trajectory from older books to contemporary artist books. Though there are some scroll and sculpture books forms displayed for formal and historical context, the main exhibits concentrate on the codex form, pages that are bound together in a definitive sequence and manipulations of that form. The central exhibit is filled with extraordinary examples of the artist book medium created by a wide variety of artists, some well-known and some emerging, who approach the creation of artist books as an interdisciplinary and multimedia practice. These books provide us with complicated aesthetic experiences. They are like small theaters that draw us into the total environment of their stages. They demand the reader's full attention and presence, and their physical and conceptual engagement. This is one of the main lessons one takes away from the experience of reading an artist book. In the culture of distraction, one must be vigilant in order to learn how to pay attention. Xu Bing and I chose to represent two radically different genres of the codex. The central exhibit consists of conceptually, materially, and structurally ambitious hardcover and hand-bound and hard-bound artist books. The Zine Store satellite exhibit is a simulacra of a store that features inexpensive, intimate, and often personal artist publications called zines, a derivative term of fanzine, which in turn is a derivative form of magazine. We chose zines that, one, are larger editions, 100 to 500 copies; two, have been published by younger artists; three, have simple softcover codex structures; and four, feature the exuberant integration of text and image. I borrowed the name for the Diamond Leaves Zine Store from the collective project of Wisconsin countercultural pioneers Elizabeth Was and Mikkel And. Dreamtime Village was a real place, a collective farm in rural Wisconsin that strove to be an autonomous zone of cultural experimentation. Elizabeth and Mikkel's pioneering visions introduced me and thousands of others to the concept of sustainable and do-it-yourself DIY culture, and their own innovative publications catalyzed hundreds of others to create their own zines. Thus, the exhibition contrasted the materially elegant and conceptually complex artist book practice with the accessible and populous DIY printed book culture. The value and vitality of both approaches is highly evident in the books themselves. Though these approaches appear quite different, much is shared between them. Both test the limits of the codex as a material form and as a vehicle for content. And both often have a self-critical and self-conscious relationship to authorship, objectivity, and narrative. In general, both present the author-artist as a subjective presence, and often the maker's hand is evident, and the voice of the books is personal and visceral. There is no pretense of scientific objectivity or expertise, and the experiential distance between the reader and the artist is very small. The zines seem to shout at the viewer, "Read me!" Many of the zines, though structurally and aesthetically simple, are strikingly beautiful and evocative. This is the zine's point. You can make zines, anyone can make zines. And while exhibitions of artist books and the inclusion of artist books has been a part of the Chinese art world for decades, this was the first formal introduction and major exhibition of zines in China. This part of the exhibit was extremely popular, and images in the zine exhibit were used in museum signage. I was astounded when 3 days out from the opening, I walked into the cafe and lobby, and huge blow-ups from various Occupy Wall Street issues from San Francisco's street-based Mission Mini Comics Anarchist Collective were part of the Diamond Leaves installation, about 30 feet high. When the exhibit was over, all the zines were donated to the Central Academy of Fine Arts. These are my reflections on the Diamond Leaves project. Unfortunately, time constraints prevent me from getting into any of the details of the second Diamond Leaves exhibition. So let me begin the ending with two quotes from the first Diamond Leaves exhibition catalog, which, along with some of the books shown and discussed in this lecture, may still be available from the Brooklyn table at the book fair. The first quote is from Mark Dimunation, and I think he sums up the impact of the exhibition quite succinctly. I quote, "The extraordinary works selected for Diamond Leaves deliberately push us as readers and as viewers. Regardless of how they position themselves on the spectrum of the book arts, these works insist that we consider and experience them in new ways. We are expected to embrace the challenge, to discern and comprehend and ponder until we unearth meaning. Even with these earlier ventures, we are already being instructed that the Codex was no longer to be taken for granted. Such a message is now delivered by more than 100 distinct loud voices in this exhibition. Never has there been such a gathering of contemporary artist books. Never has the art form been so challenging in its efforts to forge a new vision of the intention and meaning of the book." Diamond Leaves is no mere survey of the artist book. We are instead dropped into the mist of the modern book, and much is asked of us. Surrounded by this astounding array of 21st century artist books, we are absorbed into the process. We enter into the dialogue that each of these works demands of us in order that they be comprehended. The second quote is from Chinese iconoclast Zikang Zhuang from his 2012 book, Balancing Encyclopedias. "There will come a time when the page full of text is a forgotten relic. When language is constructed of gestures and symbols and characters so fluid that the concept of a static alphabet will seem as quaint and useful as a catapult. The book will be a chimerical vehicle for these dynamic languages. It will be infused with magnets and medicines. Living organisms will grow in its pages and converse with the reader. Its papers will be form of light rays and things as yet unknown to us. The only thing that we can be sure of in the future is that the book will still be there, cradling us in its arms as we cradle it in ours. The future is in our hands right now. Surely it is reflected in the Diamond Leaves. I encourage everyone who has not yet visited the Book Arts in China tables or Zhu Bing's books at the Brooklyn table to do so. And if you have already visited those tables and been perplexed by those books, maybe the contextualizing lens of this presentation will inspire you to look again. Perhaps there were facets you did not discern. In any case, I'm looking forward to seeing you all in Beijing at the 2018 Diamond Leaves Triennial. Till then, I leave you with the seed of the tree that blossomed Diamond Leaves. Thank you so much.